Our next public hearing is change of zone number 1690, LT Associates LLC.
This is an application to amend the comprehensive zoning map from an AR1 agriculture residential district to a CR1 commercial residential district for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, for land lying at the southeast corner of Road 268, also known as King's Highway, and Road 267, also known as Gill's Neck Road, to be located on 45.77 acres, more or less. For the record, on August 31st of 2009, the applicants provided the commission with this exhibit booklet, about 3 inches thick, I guess. And it's got, I'll give you some a summation of what some of the comments are in that exhibit booklet, since the applicant's going to direct a lot of their comments to the exhibit booklet anyway. It's got an executive summary, series of surveys and maps of the site, correspondence back and forth between the applicant's representatives from George Miles and Burl LLC to the Office of State Planning Coordination. And there's a series of comments and that's standard. There's an application to the Office of State Planning Coordination, and they respond within a certain time frame. Then the applicant has to respond to that, and then the Office of State Planning Coordination responds again. So they go back and forth quite a few times to get a final summation from the Office of State Planning Coordination. Their final summation was on August 25th of 2009, whereby a letter was received voicing no objection to this rezoning. There's a statement of conformity with the comprehensive land use plan update. There's references to the land use surrounding zoning and site location, again with a series of maps. And they reference the existing land use, future land use, potential municipal boundary annexations, and water supply, wastewater, et cetera. There's news articles from the Cape Gazette back to even 2007. There's references to developing an MOU between the City of Lewis and the Office of State Planning Coordination. There's references to the City of Lewis Comprehensive Plan data, referencing specifically annexation plans and an open space report and additional maps, et cetera. There are references to the Sussex County School District map showing the site, a school impact report prepared by David Brandenberger, dated January of 08, which included age profiles for the Lewis area, an emergency evacuation plan for the Lewis area, emergency vehicle route maps and response routes, contact list. There's design consideration and architectural character renderings. There's references to environmental assessments and a public facility evaluation report. There's references to the Conservation District comments, pre-design meeting, water balance calculations, design assumption memorandum for preliminary stormwater management, additional maps in reference to floodplains and wetlands and storm surge FEMA maps. There's also references to traffic and transportation with related comments from McCormick Taylor, a consultant for DelDOT, and a traffic impact study review services, et cetera, referencing DelDOT also. There were comments from Worth Rogers Associates Incorporated, being a preliminary response letter to the traffic impact study. And there's also a public comment review letter. And there are proposed findings of fact for consideration by the commission and council in future meetings. The commission was also provided with a packet of information. And it's double-sided, it's smaller, but it includes a letter from City of Lewis to the Office of State Planning Coordination with copies of a PowerPoint presentation referencing the Greater Lewis Vision Plan. There's also copies of comments received on August 31st of 2009 from the Sussex Conservation District and a memorandum from the County Engineering Department received earlier today from the Utility Planning Division in reference to SOAR. Those comments were copied because they were not a part of the applicant's exhibit booklet. I also received one letter in support of the application by email, and also received a series of 43 letters, either by email, memorandum, or actual letters received in the mail, and some by fax. And again, there was 43 letters in opposition, and all those names on those corresponding letters will be made a part of the record for today's proceedings. I also, the last one I received was late this afternoon, and it was requested that it be read into the record. So it is a short form, and it's an email. To whom it may concern, I previously submitted testimony to the Planning and Zoning regarding the land use application submitted by Lingo Townsend. The entire area under discussion this evening is a vast archaeological resource. It is recognized on an international basis for its historic value to the town of Lewis, Sussex County, the state of Delaware, and the entire United States of America. Human remains have been located throughout this area and are interned at the National Museum of History, the Smithsonian, located in Washington, D.C. The parameters of the archaeological digs were highly limited due to limits imposed on the digs by Mr. Townsend. Therefore, I strongly encourage Planning and Zoning to deny and all requests to build on this area and abide by Delaware's unmarked human remains law. And thanking for consideration, Jules Jackson. And that's all I have, gentlemen, if you have questions.
All right, sir, we thank you. The chair recognizes Mr. Schrader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the benefit of the record, my name is Dennis Schrader. I'm an attorney here in Georgetown, and I represent the interests of the applicant. By way of introduction, there are members of the LLC known as LT Associates, and I'm not sure where they got off to because they're in the shadows in the back.
Okay.
And they are here present this evening, as are a number of professionals that will be participating with me this evening in the presentation of the applicant's case. And if you'll let me, I'll introduce these gentlemen to you. And I have a small proffer to make that may make it a little easier for us this evening.
Okay.
I have Frank Key from Frank M. Key Communities. I have Jack Hollins, who is from an architectural firm, MVA. Tucker Mooreshead, Leif Erickson, Tom Martins, Jim Willey. Derek Kennedy. Some of us you recognize from other presentations. Each of these gentlemen is a professional that has worked or has participated in or has the educational skills to participate in land use planning matters. Typically, we try to proffer their expertise, and what I've done this evening is I have a packet that I'll present to Mr. Robertson, which is the curriculum vitae of each of these gentlemen, with the exception of Derek Kennedy. Derek's didn't get here in time for us to print before we walked over this evening in the rain, but Mr. Kennedy has previously appeared before you on matters of traffic impact. His testimony has been accepted as an expert, and so I would ask that the curriculum vitae be made part of the record and that Mr. Kennedy be acknowledged to be an expert in the field in which he will testify later on.
All right, sir.
You have heard Mr. Lank describe briefly the project, and I'm going to just re-describe it briefly for you by way of a summary. As you all are keenly aware, I think we were all together here about 18 months or so ago when this application was previously presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission and the County Council, and probably a large number of the people who are behind me in the room were also here at the same time. So some of the stuff that I say it probably goes without saying, but I've got to get the record perfected a little bit.
Understand.
The owners of this site are J.G. Townsend Jr. and Company. The applicant is LT Associates, as I indicated. Mr. Lank has described for you a description briefly of the property, and it is located at the corner of Gills Neck Road and Kings Highway. I suspect that there isn't a soul in this room who doesn't own a radio, TV, or bought a newspaper that isn't familiar with where this particular site is located. As indicated, this site that we're proposing for rezoning is 45.77 acres. By way of comparison, where we were with the first application made on this site, it was originally 68.3 acres, and so it has been reduced by about 33% in terms of its gross area. Currently, the property is zoned AR1, agricultural residential, and it is being used as part of the farming operations for J.G. Townsend Jr. and Company. Our proposed change of zone application goes for a CR1 commercial residential district. If that zoning is granted, it would be the wishes of the applicant to develop the site by placing 300,000 square feet of commercial use on the site, along with 20,000 square feet of office space. This is different than the originally proposed 520,000 square feet by being about a 38% reduction in the scope of the uses that would be put on this site. Under the Comprehensive Land Use Plan of Sussex County, as it was updated in 2008, this site is in an environmentally sensitive developing area, which makes it a growth area. Under the state strategies map for spending, this site is both in a level two and in a level three. That is, the level two, which provides for suburban or rapidly growing area with public water and wastewater, which this has, and is adjacent to or intermingled with other fast-growing areas. There are no public or private streets per se that are involved with this project because it's not of the same nature as an RPC or of a subdivision, but there will be interior drives and there will be connector streets provided to the adjacent subdivisions, and those will be constructed to Sussex County standards and will be maintained as a part of the private interior streets of the project with sidewalk street lighting, demarcated parking spots. Sanitary waste disposal can be provided for by the Sussex County Engineering Department through the West Rehoboth expansion of the Dewey Beach Sanitary Sewer District. There was a letter received into the file today from the County Engineering Department that describes that, which is the form letter that is typically sent by them. Water supply will be provided by the Tidewater Utilities System and is a regulated water supply utility. There are no delineated wetlands on site, either state or 404, and as a result, no buffers will be required. The site is approximately 500 feet from any adjacent wetlands, and we'll have further discussion of that as we go through the evening. We have filed with you an exhibit book that contains many exhibits that will be discussed as we go through the evening. It includes reports, studies, correspondence from permitting agencies, all of which address the various matters that need to be discussed in this particular application. I think the chairman and probably Mr. Robertson have tried to convey to me as the applicant's attorney and perhaps to Mr. Sergovic and those who represent the opponents the message that this is not a site plan review. We're here for another purpose tonight. We're not here to discuss specific site engineered solutions to specific site engineered problems that may need to be addressed. The question, as the chair has stated earlier in the first application, is whether or not the zoning designation for this particular parcel on the official zoning map of Sussex County should be amended so that its designation is no longer AR1, but is CR1. Assuming for a moment that that designation would be made, then we get into significant technical issues in terms of engineered solutions for engineered type problems that result from this type of project. The problem, and I suspect Mr. Sergovic is looking at the same issue as I am, is that this zoning application in this hearing will require the presentation of facts supported by substantial evidence. And that means, as Mr. Robertson has described them, that the facts have to be material, relevant, and in some way prove a point that is required either by the comprehensive plan or by the zoning code. The problem is that because the PLUS process, which we all will look to a little later on as we go through this, identifies various agency reviews that get into various technical aspects. And we're caught on the horns of a dilemma. The dilemma is, do we go by with what the real issue is here, or do we try to address what the technical requirements are? In addition to that, I suspect there are 150 people standing behind me that would like to comment on this project, and many of the things that they will say, we think we have anticipated, and to some extent we have to anticipate what those criticisms will be because we're going to be limited to one time only for our presentation. So I ask for the leave of the commission to bear with us as we try to maintain a level of relevancy We try to stay within what we are required to do in order to accomplish a proper presentation to you, but understand that when we go into the fine points of the comp plan and the various elements that are required to be discussed, we may very well get repetitive, and I think Mr. Robertson may agree with me, and maybe even Mr. Sergovic. As you go through the comp plan, many of the issues are churned. They reappear in separate elements so that you may have to say the same thing five times. We're going to try to avoid doing that, but it may actually occur. Similarly, we've got to respond to the plus comments, which also are involved, and we're going to try to minimize that presentation. Lastly, I point out that probably one of the single biggest issues we're going to speak of this evening are transportation issues. We're going to try to minimize the presentation there and refresh your recollection that, at least as far as PLUS and DelDOT are concerned, PLUS has no opposition to this application, nor does DelDOT, and that there are various arrangements and agreements that may or will be made by the applicant and the Department of Transportation for highway improvements that will make some solutions available for things that are to be discussed. Having set that background, I do have all these gentlemen with me, but I do not propose to call them all as witnesses. I'm going to have Mr. Key come forward as a land plan consultant who will discuss PLUS and the comprehensive plan. I will have Mr. Hollins who will talk about the architectural considerations, which is one of the comp plan elements. I will have Mr. Kennedy talk about traffic. Mr. Willie will discuss environmental and infrastructure considerations. And Mr. Martins will talk about the economic analysis as a part of the economic development element that is a part of the comp plan. And then lastly, depending upon what time it is tonight or tomorrow morning, I hope to be able to get up and give a summary of where we are. Thank you. And at this time, I'll have Mr. Key come forward.
Yes, sir. Good evening. I'm Frank Key. Frank Key Communities, Rob with Delaware. I'm going to try to be really, really brief on the PLUS comments. At the end of the day, the final PLUS response was that they had no objection to the rezoning of the property. In a very brief letter dated August 25th, 2009. I would say, though, that the process that got us there was we submitted a 387,000 square foot plan to PLUS. The result of their review was specifically some comments by DelDOT that led to the addition of a street that you'll see on the site plan when we get there. That caused the square footage of the proposition to go down to 320,000 square feet, and we responded as such to the PLUS letter. With that said, I'd like to kind of get to the heart of the matter, which is the project's conformity to the comprehensive plan. And as Dennis said, it's sort of unavoidably redundant because of the way the plan sort of spirals around issues, and I'll try to avoid that if I can. In brief,
I'll let you know if you have trouble.
I'm sure. The property is within a designated growth area, as Dennis mentioned. It's called the Environmentally Sensitive Developing Area. It has a designation in the comprehensive plan of low to medium density, which specifically allows commercial residential, as demonstrated by Table 8 on page 321 of the comprehensive plan. It's pretty direct. The site is also located in investment levels 2 and 3. Those are areas, as you know, where local, county, and state government comprehensive plans anticipate growth in the long-term future, and the state will support investments for future growth in these areas in accordance with livable Delaware policies. It is located on Kings Highway, which is a designated principal arterial roadway in the comprehensive plan, and a major arterial roadway under Section 99.5 of the subdivision ordinance, where such uses are, and activities, in fact, are encouraged. The sewer and water service, as well as other utilities, are available to the site at the applicant's expense, many of which have already been extended by the applicant to nearby sites. The site is virtually surrounded by either previously approved commercial, single-family, and high-density multifamily residential development. As mentioned there, it's surrounded by existing commercial, educational, business, residential areas. In effect, I called it an orphan farm, or it soon will be. It's right, it'll be surrounded by commercial residential. It'll become, in effect, a bad neighbor. There's noise, dust, odors, and all the things that we find that we have to put the active farming notice in on subdivision plans will occur there if it remains a farm, and likely will become unprofitable when it's at 68 acres. There is a demonstrated demand for over 350,000 square feet of commercial space in the area. We have an economic impact analysis as well as a market analysis that's included in the book that demonstrates this. It's not available today. It will occur and grow over the course of the next five and then five more years. So going out and building something like this tomorrow wouldn't be reasonable. But, of course, it'll take 2 years to get site plans approved were we successful with the zoning, and a year to build it, or even to build the first phase. So it's really a phased approach to grow into a market that's developing over the next few years. The health, safety, and welfare of the citizens of Sussex County will be served by the application of this land use in the following manner. In terms of health, nutrients from the site will be reduced by compliance with the state's pollution control strategy. It's a farm. It has a lot of actively applied nutrients. In fact, we'll talk about their effect on wells that are nearby. The localized, shallow, unconfined aquifer will be recharged through the use of green technology, stormwater management practices, to an extent equaling or surpassing that produced by current farming practices. We've done a water balance that Mr. Willard will discuss. The use of groundwater will be reduced by elimination of agricultural water wells, or at the very least, conversion of them to typical residential commercial irrigation purposes. In other words, those large ag wells that are out there that are drawing millions of gallons a year, every year, will either be abandoned or reduced, which will more than offset the draw of water from the project itself. Multimodal transportation choices will allow non-vehicular access to the site, thus reducing local vehicular trips associated with shopping and entertainment. Providing shopping and entertainment venues closer to nearby residents will reduce and shorten vehicular trips, and that has the side effect of reducing carbon dioxide output. In terms of safety, the transportation improvements totaling approximately $8.5 million will improve traffic flow and safety in the area and exceeds DLDOT's requirements for such. We have an agreement in principle with DLDOT over what these traffic improvements will be that more than mitigate this project's impact on the streets and intersections there, and we'll get into that in more detail as well. The intersections that I'm talking about will be signalized. They improve vehicular, cyclist, and pedestrian safety, including those entering and leaving Cape Henlopen High School, Gills Neck, and Clay Roads with full intersection improvements. Because movement at these intersections will be improved, evacuation in case of emergency will be improved, as well as that of EMT vehicular movement or emergency traffic. An example.
Ladies and gentlemen, quiet. If you can't keep quiet, you can leave the room. Go ahead, sir.
An example of that is a project that you all are aware that I was involved in the past. It's called Americana Bayside. Bayside had to reroute Route 20 and do massive improvements at 20 and 54. 8 years after the rezoning, traffic is moving far better than it ever was, and any emergency traffic does too, and any evacuation traffic would have the same result. That's an example of what I'm talking about. These kind of traffic improvements occur at the beginning of the project, not at the end. When those things occur, naturally adding turn lanes and traffic lights and so forth will improve traffic conditions. It just works that way. Now, eventually, like a home that adds a family or anything else, those will fill back up, but that will occur as growth in the area continues and homes get built in the nearby subdivisions. That's why it gets better. It won't always stay better, not forever, but it will be better initially and last for years. Mr. Kennedy will talk about that later. In terms of public welfare, hundreds of both temporary construction-related jobs and permanent jobs will be created. About $1.6 million a year in taxes will be paid to state and local governments. The anchoring effect of this retail center will provide synergistic benefits to other commercial development in the area, including that in downtown Lewis. These shops are not the kind of shops that draw business away from the boutique shops that are in Lewis, and I know that's a major concern. Mr. Martin from Economic Research Associates can also discuss that in greater detail. The Village Center will add additional shopping venues for tourism. There's an interesting recent article in the Cape Gazette, by way of anecdote, that talks about the fact that tourism and shopping in the area are anchoring jobs in a circumstance where the job rate in Sussex County and Delaware is falling faster than almost any place else. I think unemployment is up to 8.4% at this point. In addition, the site plan, you'll see we've added a 100-space parking lot for potential future shuttle use that could benefit merchants in downtown Lewis and others, other shopping venues to where that shuttle might go, including the potential cruise ship, that's what I'm trying to say, the cruise ship that might be there. In addition, we added 25-space parking lot along one of the bike paths for cyclists so they could come in, you know, park there, take the bike off the car, and go ride on the trails there. And then, of course, sewer and water service will be extended to the site. That's kind of a brief of what the rest of this report or this statement of conformity to the comp plan is. Going through it sort of point by point, and I'll compress as best I can, there are goals in the comprehensive plan, directing development to areas with or near community services. This is one of those. Conserve the county's agricultural economy and the value of its farmland. J.G. Townsend and Company, when they develop or sell properties, they buy other properties that add back to the J.G. Townsend farms so that they can continue their agricultural practices at the same rate that they do today. That's the plan here, too. They protect critical natural resources. That is one of the goals. There are no wetlands on the site. There are no wooded areas on the site. In fact, in the Senators, Governors, and Village Center properties, there's Potshut Creek in the wooded area and the wetlands associated with those. Those have already been placed in a conservation easement, so they're protected for all time. Stormwater management on this project will consist of trains of green technology, underground sand filters, dry storm basins. All of this will reduce nutrients and recharge the shallow aquifer. I mentioned the water budget that we'll get into later and the irrigation wells. Another preservation goal is encouraging tourism and other responsible job providers. The addition of new larger format retailers will capture spending of local customers who may have driven to Dover and Salisbury, which will serve to reinforce Lewis and other nearby commercial areas as a retail location while catering to the day-to-day needs of year-round and seasonal residents and to a lesser extent visitors. In terms of jobs, there are construction-related jobs here. The direct jobs on site are about 350. There are indirect jobs and induced jobs that total 500-ish. There are ongoing annual employment. There are direct jobs on site that are expected to be about 700. Indirect jobs that spin off are about 70. Induced jobs are about 131. Thus, there are about 900 jobs created as a result of this, either through directly on site or through trickle down. Again, today we have one of the highest unemployment percentages. I believe it's 8.4% in the nation. One of the goals is ensuring new developments incorporate usable open space and best design practices. This is one of the goals, and it's one of the reasons why, with your indulgence, we'll get briefly into site planning issues later. We do have usable active open space. It's a small village green of about a third of an acre, but there's also perimeter landscaping. It's buffering from the surroundings, and it's used for stormwater management purposes because we expect these to be recharging dry basins or dry swales. The total open space on this 45 acres is 9.13 acres, or 20% of the total site, which is highly unusual for a commercial project, as I'm sure you're aware, because mostly every square inch needs to be used for parking or buildings. That's not the case here. This is a growth area, as Dennis mentioned earlier. In fact, in the environmentally sensitive growth area, the quote from the The comprehensive plan is Sussex County's primary growth areas will continue to be centered around its 25 municipalities. These growth areas are where allowable residential densities will remain highest and where most commerce will continue to be directed. That's right from the comp plan. This is one of those places. We're in the medium density. We're environmentally sensitive growth area. We're also in direct alignment with livable Delaware strategies, and maybe that's one of the issues that we have with this project in general. This thing is in complete alignment with all of the available plans. The comprehensive plan would encourage development in this growth area. Spending strategies encourage the same thing, and yet it's at a place that's at least controversial, obviously. The purpose of state strategies, as with the original strategies for state policies and spending, is to coordinate land use decision-making with the provision of infrastructure and services in a manner that makes best use of our natural and physical resources. That's from state strategies. The Village Center site is located where they intended these kinds of uses to be located, including on a major arterial roadway. In terms of directing growth, again, from livable Delaware strategies, levels 1 through 3 identify which areas of the state are most prepared for growth and where the state can make the most cost-effective infrastructure investments for the likes of schools, roads, and public safety. In this case, being a commercial development, obviously there's no strong draw on services. Police, fire and rescue, emergency services, yes, but none of the rest, as in the case of houses. In this circumstance, this will throw off far more taxes than it will ever consume in services. In part, and this is a quote from the same plan, the state strategies are meant to act as a guide for adequate infrastructure provision throughout Delaware while minimizing the burden on state taxpayers. In this case, the applicant has or will be providing such services to the site. In the case of transportation improvements, there'll be all the improvements required by DelDOT will be done by the applicant to mitigate the impacts on the existing transportation system. And DelDOT is satisfied that the improvements that we're making will do that very thing. They will mitigate this project's impacts. There's a section concerning involving citizens. In terms of the development of the comprehensive plan, that document, that comprehensive plan that has the force of law, sets the overall pattern of land use. Additionally, all land use regulations are based on this document. The Sussex County Comprehensive Plan obviously was updated in 2008. As demonstrated later in this presentation, the plan included extensive public and municipal input and review, including the town of Lewis. It's important to note that the town of Lewis held extensive internal and public meetings concerning annexation of this site and other nearby properties over the years that led to the annexation area shown in its 2005 comprehensive plan update, that is, the town's. That plan does not include the Village Center property. Perhaps more importantly are certain conclusions drawn by the town over time leading to the final conclusion not to annex this and other lands because the town could see no economic benefit to itself. That is a quote from their plan. In fact, it says, in 1992, the annexation subcommittee was established. There was also much discussion about annexing land for the exclusive purpose of creating a green belt around Lewis. The committee felt that in this situation, it might be preferable for the city to purchase the land. The committee also analyzed the potential for increases to the city's tax base against the increase in the police, trash, and street maintenance services which the city would assume, and they determined that annexation provided no monetary advantage, unquote. The report goes on to say, and I quote, however, the subcommittee strongly felt that the one overwhelming advantage to annexation for city residents was the opportunity for the city of Lewis rather than the Sussex County Council to control land use in those areas. In fact, the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan does govern. It is the governing document. It's also apparent that the testimony you're going to hear tonight is effectively no more than an attempt to ride the landowners' backs to get the green belt that they've mentioned right in their own comprehensive plan. That's what this is about. Going on to the introduction, and that's all I've gotten to so far in this. In the introduction, it encourages appropriate types of development in compatible locations at suitable densities. The Sussex County government encourages economic growth and strongly protects private property rights. That's in the comp plan as well. I've gone through these points. We're in the designated growth area, et cetera. There are implications of population growth mentioned in the plan. The plan talks about the need for more central water and sewer services. In this case, the applicant will provide that to the site. They've done about $2.8 million of work on the headworks at the sewer treatment plant previously. They're expanding the water service, and it's all sized for not only these projects, but those around them. It talks about the county comprehensive plan. Talks about more traffic congestion. It says traffic follows growth. The county and DelDOT have coordinated on studying the busiest part of the SR1 corridor and other locations. And they've examined what road and intersection improvements could potentially be funded by applicants, either in part or in full. It's one of the sort of principles of the comprehensive plan that development pay for development. There's the provision of the use of the terms adequate infrastructure that I mentioned before. In this case, DelDOT estimated that the applicant was responsible for approximately $3.6 million in transportation improvements in the area. This was based on the traffic impact study that was done for senators, governors, the project site itself. There's a property called the Jones property that's not owned by the applicant, but back toward Route 1. In addition, there was another study that was done for the Schofield project. All this was taken into consideration by DelDOT when its consultants made recommendations. In fact, the improvements will cost the applicant about $8.5 million. There's about $5 million in right-of-way dedication on Gills Neck Road, both sides in certain circumstances on Kings Highway, on both sides where their Jones Farm property touches Kings Highway, down Clay Road. That's about $5 million worth of property just in the dedication. $3.5 million is estimated for the construction cost of the following improvements. Gills Neck Road, Kings Highway, Cape Henlopen High intersection, a full signalized with full turning movements intersection. A contribution to the cost of Route 1 and Dartmouth Drive intersection to the tune of $50,000, even though the responsibility estimated by DelDOT for that intersection was only just under $10,000. Clay Road and the Town Center site entrance.
$10,000
what?
$10,000, okay.
Yes. A fully signalized intersection at Clay Road and the Town Center site entrance. Mentioned right of way, Gills Neck Road and Town Center site entrance, which is the actual entrance off Gills Neck into the project itself. There are bike trails and sidewalks through the projects, and then of course there are the extra parking spaces that I mentioned earlier. The comp plan goes on to talk about public involvement. There was a website that the county had that showed intentions with the comp plan as they moved through the process. There were public meetings at different locations, including the town of Lewis. County staff members and planning consultants met in one-on-one interviews with small focus group sessions with key persons representing groups like conservationists and concerned citizens committees, among others. There were public hearings held. County staff hosted similar meetings to further describe the draft plan. In other words, there was a lot of public participation in this. By the time the county comprehensive plan was adopted, it was or should have been very well known to the public, very well known to the town of Lewis and every other municipality involved. There's an important statement made in the comprehensive plan. It talks about these meetings being very well attended. And several people in these meetings expressed their belief that Sussex County needs to focus more on controlling growth, removing traffic congestion, and better preserving the natural environment. However, a large contingent of participants expressly rejected the notion of regulations or policies that would further constrain private property rights particularly with regard to the future development of potential farmland. The county's meetings with officials from the individual municipalities focus primarily on coordinating county growth zone boundaries with each jurisdiction's plans for internal growth and future annexations. The county emphasized how each municipality's comp plan was reviewed and taken into account in preparing the county's draft future land use plan. The towns all know, they were all involved, is the bottom line. The future land use element is perhaps one of the most important elements in the plan. In it, they talk about location of development. There's an interesting table in the plan that talks about between the years 2003 and 2006 alone, in the areas that are the primary and secondary market areas for this shopping center, there were 5,277 building permits issued. In addition, when we get into the market analysis, the site, it based on that growth, potential future growth, as well as tourism, which amounts to about 1,879,000 visitors every year. It says the site could support from 260,000 to 320,000 square feet by 2013 and between 350,000 and 410,000 square feet of retail by 2018. This is what I mentioned before. It's a growing market. If you tried to build it today and put 320,000 square feet, there wouldn't be a market to support it, not today. In a couple of years, it will grow into it. 5 years, there could be 260,000. 10 years, the whole 320,000 might be realized. The comp plan talks about future land use plan also designates which part of the counties that are to be considered growth areas. It says being labeled in a growth area has implications in county zoning. The location of growth areas designated by Sussex County also influences Delaware's policies on spending, which we've discussed already. The goals and purpose of the future land use plan are discussed. One is direct development to areas that have community services or can secure them cost effectively. I've already mentioned the applicant will do, you know, the services are at his expense and he's providing all of them. Conserve the county's agricultural economy by promoting farming and preserving agricultural land values. I've mentioned that already as well. That's the concept of the orphan farm because it's going to be reduced to 68 acres at best. It'd be difficult and probably unprofitable to farm. It talks about protecting critical natural resources such as the inland bays and others by guarding against overdevelopment and permanently preserving selected lands. It's important to note that the subject property has never been identified as a site targeted for preservation by any entity or agency other than perhaps the City of Lewis, but is identified as a growth area in the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan update. Further, natural resources will be protected as the site is developed in the following ways. Nutrients will be reduced by conforming to the state's pollution control strategy. Appropriate stormwater management techniques. Surface runoff will be allowed to percolate and it'll be cleaned before it does, basically with green technology. The reduction of the use or the elimination of the use of the agricultural wells will essentially ensure that there will be adequate drinking water for the town of Lewis from its wells. No wetlands or wooded areas will be disturbed, no endangered species will be disturbed, and no archaeological features will be disturbed. In fact, a professional archaeologist performed the appropriate study, and no home sites, grave sites, or Native American burial sites were found on the site other than in the areas that were previously shown in the senator's and governor's plans that have been preserved in place in perpetuity. Another goal is to encourage tourism.
There are people that think they're one and the same, but let the record show that you meant to say tourism.
Yeah, I wish I'd pull that off on purpose, too. It's to encourage tourism and other responsible commercial and industrial job providers to locate and invest in the county. Again, we've already discussed the jobs that can be made available by virtue of construction and permanent retail employment. Ensuring that new developments incorporate preserved usable open space and other best practices in subdivision design. And while that's not, this is not a subdivision, at least in my opinion, the goal was achieved with preserving wooded areas and wetlands associated with the adjacent creek, together with the provision of the village square as active open space and the perimeter green space on the site. Another is to make Sussex County's growth and conservation policies clear to relevant Delaware state agencies, neighboring counties, and Sussex County's incorporated municipalities. Again, this has to do with the fact that many meetings were held during the comp plan process, the update process, and in the end, this was a designated growth area. In terms of growth areas, the plan seeks to direct the county's most concentrated forms of new development to growth areas, including most higher density residential development and most business development. And that's a quote from the comp plan. The county used the following guidelines to help determine where growth areas should be located. Proximity to an incorporated municipality or a municipal annexation area. Though the site is outside of any municipal annexation area, it is within 1/2 mile of the town of Lewis, within state spending levels 2 and 3, in a growth zone, et cetera. Another guideline is presence of existing public sewer and public water services nearby. We've talked about that, that's there. Plans by the county to provide public sewage services within 5 years. We are in a sanitary sewer district. The county doesn't need to provide the sewer service. That will be done at the applicant's expense. Location on or near a major road. The site's located on King's Highway, which is a designated major arterial roadway. It talks about, as a guideline, character and intensity of surrounding development, including proposed development. The fact is that when one leaves Route 1 onto King's Highway from either of the strands, you find general offices, medical offices, homes, apartments, the high school, church, maintenance facilities, a pool and spa sales office, an electrical sales and service operation, banks, a bakery, a crematorium and funeral home, and a window and door sales facility, if you condense them to their general uses. These uses exist there. That's what you pass through on the way to the site itself. It's also interesting to note that the school itself, which is somewhere, it's about 215 or so thousand square feet, is, at least in my opinion, architecturally singular. It's sort of Jeffersonian in nature, at least that's what I think.
Ma'am, we don't need that. All right, sir, go ahead.
The high school is actually right across the street from the site, and more than any other structure out there, that's a big structure, and it has a pretty distinct architectural character. And although Lewis can't be seen from the site in the architecture of the school, it's elegant, but it has little in common with downtown Lewis. In the earlier application, there was a lot of testimony about being in context with the town of Lewis. And in fact, as you'll see, the applicant's gone to great lengths to develop architectural character for the Village Center that is in context with the architecture of certain of the buildings on Second Street. Not all of them, because some of them are smaller, more almost residential in nature. But some of the larger masonry buildings make sense for buildings like this.
Mr. Key, you are talking about the new school, correct?
Yes.
Okay, just for clarity.
Yes, the new school. Another guideline is location relative to major preserved lands. The site's located very near Pothook Creek, which has been already protected by the applicant. And it is across the street from the preserved farmland there, the ag preservation land. But other than that site and the small farm, the Jones Farm across the street, it is surrounded by either existing or proposed development, as can be seen from the aerial photograph that we had earlier. Another is the area's environmental character. Again, it's in the environmentally sensitive developing area, which is a designated growth area. And then it talks about how the area ranks according to Delaware state policies for spending. And again, we've mentioned that. Where those things are concerned, the state policies foster orderly growth and resource protection, not degradation, according to the comp plan. Well, the Village Center is located where the state intends to spend money on that, although any impact by this development will be mitigated by the improvements that the applicant intends. As far as state coffers are concerned, the project will spin off about $1.46 million a year of the $1.6 total. As the comp plan goes on, it talks about the environmentally sensitive developing area again. The challenge in these regions, it says, is to safeguard genuine natural areas and mitigate roadway congestion without stifling the tourism and real estate markets that provide many jobs, create business for local entrepreneurs, and help keep local tax rates reasonable. It talks about careful control of stormwater runoff and sediment erosion control. As stated before, no natural areas will be disturbed, and transportation improvements will again be done by the applicant. Tourism will be enhanced additionally. This is an additional shopping venue for tourists, especially if we have more brought in on cruise ships. I'm going to see if I can. There's a conservation element. It gets into inland bays preservation. The unbuilt environment in Sussex County includes wetlands, waterways, beaches, upland forests, farmland, meadows, and other open areas. It's clear, really, from the evolution of federal, state, and local law, including livable Delaware policies and the comp plan itself, that certain lands are protected before others, meaning wetlands, waterways, beaches, upland forests are protected in favor of developing uplands, not upland forests, but uplands. Most of the uplands here that aren't in forests are in farmland. So inevitably, you're pushed into developing farmland. Not every time, but most of the time. There are land preservation strategies in the conservation strategies element of the comp plan. It talks about the following strategies are directed at actions that the county will take, although certain of these are applicable to the development proposed. One is that the county will encourage state and tributary action teams to finish formulating pollution control strategies for the inland bays. That, in fact, occurred, and we will conform to those. Amend appropriate sections of the zoning and subdivision code to encourage more green stormwater management techniques. That's also been done. We conform with those. Amend appropriate sections of Sussex County zoning and subdivision codes to add regulations that will help protect critical wildlife habitat. We don't have any impact on that whatsoever. Raise landowners' awareness about the myriad of financial incentives that the state offers to protect and better manage forest land, wetlands, wildlife habitat, and farmland. The wetlands and woodlands are already in a conservation easement, as mentioned. There's an issue of adopting a wellhead protection ordinance mentioned. In fact, a large part of this site is in the recharge area as defined in the comp plan state maps. And again, you'll hear from Jim Willie that there is a water balance that's done. The PLUS letter talked about reducing impervious surfaces to 50% of the site or less if possible. We can and will do that. We can do it through the use of pervious pavers. We can't reduce paving much. The county requires that at this size that we park at 6 spaces per 1,000 feet. That's actually 20% more than practically any place in the country. It's over parked, but that is the code, and we do conform to it. The comp plan actually says the ideal type of land use around water wells is preserved open space or low-density residential development. But it also goes on to say that agricultural uses promote recharge but may result in high nitrate levels in the water. The fact is that the well nearest the site is currently exhibiting higher nitrate levels. And in fact, by taking the farm offline, it will help reduce those nitrate levels in the future. There's a parks and recreation element in the comp plan that talks about state parks and forests. And suggestions have been made by our opposition that the property should be preserved as open space or even a park. Even though the comp plan and the state spending strategies clearly drive land uses of this kind to the proposed area. Aside from the fact that the subject property is private and not for use by public under any circumstances today, the reasoning seems to be that more nearby parkland is somehow needed. The fact is that DENREC's Division of Parks and Recreation manages three administrative units in Sussex County, which include five state parks, seven nature preserves, and other recreation lands for a total of 14,265 acres. Cape Henlopen State Park, as you know, is in Lewis. There's a greenways and trails section. The junction and breakwater trails has been continued across Wolf Glade by the applicant. The trail will also be continued across the senator's and governor's residential properties onto and across the proposed village center site, also by the applicant at its cost. There's a water and wastewater element. I think we've covered that. There's an economic development, the economic development element that talks to economic development strategies. I've mentioned already that this shopping venue will it will enhance tourism in effect. You know, the visitors have yet another place to go, and we know from recent articles that, in fact, jobs here are anchored by tourism and by shopping, among other things. This tourism is an interesting subject because we all know that we all exist in terms of economics greatly due to tourism. In fact, efforts are made by the town of Lewis, chambers of commerce, and others to attract more tourism all the time. As reported in the Cape Gazette, Lewis received a $35,000 grant from Preserve America, which was to be used to promote an off-season maritime historic tourism plan. There was another $3,000 in terms of grants were to upgrade the organization's website, that is the Lewis Historical Society, to improve regional marketing for off-season events. You know, again, these tourism events, that's very important, the shopping that's associated with it that goes with tourism, it's sort of a synergistic experience, and that's what we believe this would assist with. There's an historic preservation element that talks about preserving the, you know, archaeological sites, both Native American and our ancestors. You'll hear testimony suggesting that human remains were removed in the past. You heard the letter that was read. That is a fact. They were. They're in the Smithsonian. But you'll also hear testimony to the effect that there are bodies everywhere. That's not true either. The fact is that the two sites that were found were studied carefully. In fact, we were told, or the applicant was told at the end, not to mark those sites in any way for fear of vandalism or fear of people digging those. So they're preserved in perpetuity in easements, and they're unmarked so that they can't be found other than by archaeologists. At this point, there's a community design element in the comprehensive plan. It deals almost exclusively with residential neo-traditional community planning and design, with a slight mention of commercial facilities, a few diagrams that discuss how buildings and parking should be organized on sites, and, you know, the preferred method. Page 11.4 makes mention of pitched roofs and architectural detailing on chain stores as a way of extending the best features of older areas into new neighborhoods. It talks about coordination of open spaces and trails. It says, in fact, well-distributed commercial areas throughout the county can reduce lengths of driving trips for everyday needs. That's that is primarily the reason for locating this use here. It says commercial buildings should be encouraged to be placed relatively close to the road. And I'm going to defer to Jack Holland in a moment to talk about that. Jack collaborated with me on the site plan. And there are really specific reasons why these buildings are located where they are, and while we realize this is not a site plan issue, nevertheless, the community design element of the comp plan should be addressed. And we'll talk about interconnectivity, both pedestrian or I'll call it multimodal interconnectivity in general. In fact, I'm going to turn that over to Mr. Holland right now. Jack is an architect again with MVA Architects. And then when he's done, I'd like to spend one more moment on the mobility element.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, I neglected to mention earlier that the applicant has exhibits up here on each side. I know that you can't see them from where you're sitting, so you are welcome to get up and come up and take a look. I just ask that you would do it quietly and that you refrain from talking about it while you're up here looking at it. But you are more than welcome to come up and take a look, because I know you can't see them from where you are now. So. All right, sir. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Frank. My name is Jack Holland. I'm a principal at MVNA Architects from Bethesda, Maryland. A substantial amount of our practice is in the master planning and designing of retail centers and mixed-use projects of varying scales across the eastern United States. And one of the things in our work is oftentimes very traditional, oftentimes very modern, but almost always, I've been trying to think of an example where it's not, our work is always very, very contextual. We try very hard to go in and analyze the community that we're working in and try to apply what we learn from that to the plans that we develop. The plan here is the master plan that we've developed along with the rezoning. I think what I'll do, is this microphone live?
Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead. It is.
Okay. It's been described quite often, but not with a plan in front of you. Kings Highway, Gills Neck Road, main entrance into the site will be right here off of Kings Highway, across from the new high school. That roadway leads all the way through the site, connects to the upcoming developments to the south. This, a secondary entrance to the project, comes as a right-in, right-out off of Gills Neck here, which connects again through the site to our new north-south road. This curb cut here is from a previous approval. We've kept that and extended this roadway through. So as you can see, we're trying to develop a street grid. We find that to be the most effective way of moving both vehicular and pedestrian traffic through a site. There's no bottlenecks. There's always a way to get around. Should there be an accident, should there be a broken down car, it's just a very effective way of planning. We've broken the site down into two different sections, and here's where we've kind of taken into consideration some of the planning models that we can take from Lewis, as well as some of the planning models that we can take from the surrounding area. We've called the front part of the site the streets in green. This is really where we've begun to look at how we can reflect what Lewis is all about. The back, we've called the anchor district, and it is really more in keeping, bigger buildings, it's more in keeping with the high school development. The reason for placing the streets in green, which is really what this is it's a series of streets that create a central green and public space. We've put this up on the road, on Kings Highway, so that it can be seen from the surrounding communities, and as traffic passes through, it's going to be a big advantage to these retailers here. Also, it's going to serve to screen the bigger buildings that are in the back of the project. We have a series of smaller connecting streets that will have street trees, sidewalks, crosswalks, so that it'll be safe for pedestrians to walk through the project, across the project. We've developed this diagram where you can see the pedestrian connectivity as well as what we see along these edges as very enhanced pedestrian areas along down here on both, really both. One of the things we've seen from Lewis that we really want to take and put and use in this project is the way that the buildings connect up to the sidewalk
and there's a 18-foot sidewalk. There's parking on that sidewalk. It makes for a very safe pedestrian experience and a very good shopping experience. We want parallel parking along these streets. It slows traffic, and it adds a level of zone where cars stay away from the pedestrians as they walk through. And this is just a quick diagram of the street grid that we've applied. Again, it's just a proven planning technique that we think is very appropriate for this site. There's just some basic diagrams here of some key components of both areas. The streets in green, again, we've got a major retail street. Storefronts are up on those sidewalks. It's possible for people to cross shop, which is a really key component in a good retail situation, where if you see a shop on the other side of the street, and go to that crosswalk, go across, and see that shop. It's not a situation. This area is not where you got to get into a car and go to another shop. It's very pedestrian oriented and centered by our civic green. And then to add the mixed use component, which I think is very important, we have second story office space on these two buildings that sort of sit at the head of the civic green and give it some scale. For the anchor district, some of the things we've done is, one, build these smaller, more Lewis-oriented buildings and development pattern in front of them, so they're very well screened from King's Highway. We've got major buffer all the way around that can be planted so the sides and the backs of these buildings won't be seen from the road network that we've created. We will enhance the sidewalk here so that it takes on a very similar character to the sidewalks that are in the streets and green area. And then we have, again, very good pedestrian and vehicular connectivity through the site in a number of different locations. We've done, in your packet, there were about six sketches. We've mounted two perspectives. One is an aerial hovering above King's Highway, looking into the public green with one-story buildings on these two sides. We've taken some cues from some of the one-story buildings that are in Lewis here. I think you'll see in the next sketch. Some of these buildings can be frame with shingles or siding. Others can be will be brick, different types of masonry. They probably will have some kind of a period feel to them. I think that's appropriate. In the background, you can see the two-story buildings. What we're proposing right now with those two-story buildings is that the second story comes out over the sidewalk, and the second story would be supported by columns there. And it's a great feeling, and it's a really nice space to be in, and we think that's a real good quality to promote here. And you can tell in the background, this is a freehand drawing, but it's done over a computer model. So you can see in the background, this is all very accurately done. So you can see the impact of screening that this development here in the front will do to the development in the back. And then this next sketch, just for reference, the next sketch, you're going to be standing right here. High-level view on the sidewalk in front of the storefronts, looking across a vehicular way at the civic okay. green.
Mr. Schrader, I'm going to have to ask you to remind your presenters this is not about a site plan. It's not about a pretty picture or about a design. It's also not about applauding and talking while somebody else is talking, okay? Now, I understand that there is a certain element that relates to the land use plan, and I think that point's been made, or at least it certainly has been made to us. I'm going to ask you to kind of
let me note that again, I think that, as you have correctly pointed out, there is in fact a requirement that that there are architectural considerations and community design elements that go in the comp plan. We have attempted to do that, and I had pointed out early on that we were trying to avoid that, but I think that we will hear it again. And I'm going to ask the gentleman to stand down, and perhaps in response to questions, other information will become available.
Well, I know you have a case to put on, and we want to let you do that. I just want to remind everybody what the subject matter is. So, all right, sir.
I'm going to go at risk real quick and just make one more point, and that is that
make it quick.
There's no single building on that site or group of buildings that are collective that are as large as the high school across the street. In fact, the largest building is 126,000 square feet, where the high school is about 215,000 square feet.
Okay.
In terms of the mobility element in the comprehensive plan, the comprehensive land use plans of the county and several municipalities reflect the importance and intent to coordinate with DLDOT in planning for future developments. However, those plans sometimes lack a coordinated regional approach. Not in this case. In this case, the traffic study was far-reaching. It involved every proposed project in the area. There was a secondary one that was done for the proposed Schofield project when the letter of recommendations was done for DLDOT's or by DLDOT's consultant for DLDOT. It took all of that into consideration, and we wound up with the improvements that I mentioned before. In fact, at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Derek Kennedy, if you don't mind, to let him discuss traffic in a far more detailed fashion than I may.
All right, sir.
Good evening. For the record, my name is Derek Kennedy. I'm a senior project manager with Worth Rogers and Associates. We're serving as the transportation planners and traffic engineers for the project. I guess I'll start off, give you a brief history of where we've been with the traffic study and where we are now, because there has been a lot of different reports and analysis and numbers out there. We started off with our initial traffic impact study in May of 2006. And what you see on the boards here are comparisons of volume generated by each one of those scenarios that we've looked at. The blue is the original traffic impact study. Through that process, through the DLDOT review, there was an additional land use that was proposed, and you see that in the middle, the purple. And the green is the traffic associated with the application that's before you today. It's important to note that the traffic impact study and the improvement plan that's been developed was based on the middle land use scenario. When the land use changed, we went back to DLDOT and showed them the difference, and we agreed that we would not go back and redo the study to try to reduce anything that we were already working towards an agreement. So in a sense, you know, everything we're talking about as far as an off-site improvement plan, which I'll get into, is based on a higher land use than what's actually being proposed. It just seemed more efficient and prudent to move forward on than go back and start the process. The one thing I do want to refer to the site plan quickly, Jim, if you can put up any one of these plans would be fine, Jim. And Frank Key mentioned earlier one of the changes that was made to this plan was the internal connection, the internal connector road. The previous plans we may have seen had somewhat of a connection there. You can get to point A to point B, but it kind of took you through the parking lot circulation pattern, and it was more designed for site traffic and not necessarily off-site traffic. The connection road that's in there now is designed to DLDOT's, will be designed to DLDOT's local road standards, and the intent is not just to serve traffic within the site, but to pull traffic off to provide an option, particularly for people coming out of Gills Neck Road who might be turning left. So now, rather than having everyone with a single point to make a left out of Gills Neck and all that development that's happening there, there's two options to come out on the Gills Neck. Same thing for Clay Road coming the other direction. Now they have an option of making the left like they would today or going through using the connector road. And in working with DLDOT, we estimated that as many as 70% of the people that do those movements today may divert to this connector road. And it's significant in the sense if you think about a traffic signal, usually when they get closer to capacity and you start having delay problems, it's the left turns that tend to be the issue that drive the need for improvement. In this case, if you look coming south on Gills Neck Road, now you have two options as opposed to where today you have one. So it's easy to see why that's an important factor to the site plan. So I did want to point that out before I moved on to make sure everyone understood, you know, the implication of why that change was made and what the benefit is. The off-site improvement plan that was put together by DLDOT, it included a total of 6 intersection improvements. 4 of those intersections are going to be funded and move forward by the developer as a developer project. They're going to build and construct it. 2 other intersections would be funded. They become a DLDOT project, and the developer would contribute his fair share towards those improvements. Let me switch these boards real quick. The 2 renderings shown on here are before and after of what the conditions would look like with the DLDOT proposed improvements. The first one on the left is Kings Highway and Dartmouth Drive. They're proposing a roundabout at the intersection. This is an intersection that we contribute to. It would be a DLDOT project. The one on the right is the intersection of Dartmouth and Route 1. On there, DLDOT's proposing to add a 3rd left turn lane from Dartmouth on the southbound Route 1. Again, we would make a contribution to that improvement. This is an intersection that was not part of our original study, but there was issues raised with it, and you know, we agreed that we would contribute to the improvement. The intersections that the developer would be funding and improving, flip that board right around there. So these are DLDOT or developer-funded intersection improvements that they would do relatively early in the construction phase. And they include Kings Highway and Gills Neck Road with the high school. That intersection would include widening on Kings Road to include left turn lane, through lane, and single right turn lane on each approach. Same thing for the Gills Neck intersection coming southbound. You'd have a separate left turn lane, separate through lane, separate right turn lane. On the opposite side of the high school, you would have a 2-lane approach. And in addition to the physical improvements, the signal would be modified, improved, and an important note here, and I think Frank Key mentioned that, is that the signal will be upgraded to include pedestrian facilities. It'll have marked crosswalks, pedestrian signal heads, push buttons, curb ramps to meet ADA compliance. So it'll be a significant improvement from what's out there now as far as pedestrian accessibility, which is an important note to make. Next intersection in the middle there is Kings Highway and Clay Road. Right now, unsignalized T intersection, we'd be adding a 4th leg to it, essentially operate as the main access to the site. The main access to the site to accommodate that connector or cut-through traffic that I talked about that we'd pick up, we'll be putting a double left out of the site onto Kings Highway. The Kings Highway approaches will have, same as the Gills Neck Road intersection, a left turn lane, through lane, and right turn lane on both approaches, and the same lane configuration on the opposite side on Gills Neck Road coming towards the site. At the Gills Neck Road frontage, there's 2 proposed access points. The one is shown on the far right of the plan. That would be a full movement T intersection signalized. Again, the signal would be upgraded or would be required to include pedestrian amenities. And then, the final improvement that the developer would do is not shown on the boards, but it's a right-in, right-out access on Gills Road between the main entrance and the Kings Highway intersection. In addition to the intersection improvements, there's a mid-block road widening improvement on Gills Neck Road from Kings Highway, about a half mile back to where the curve in the Kings Neck Road, or the Gills Neck Road, rather, in roadway. And that would include to bring that roadway up to local road standards, which includes 11-foot lanes, 5-foot shoulders. Beyond that, there are several areas where the client, or my client, will be dedicating right away for future improvements along Kings Highway, and that includes several acres of land. In total, it was mentioned earlier, it's about $8.5 million worth of construction work that's planned for the area. So
earlier testimony was that it was $5 million in right of ways and $3.5 million in construction work, right? Is that right?
Yes, I believe that's right. So including the acreage, it's $8.5 million, including the land value, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So what does this mean as far as traffic? What are conditions going to be like out there in the future? With the improvements that were proposed and we've agreed to do that DLDOT has asked for, we'll meet Level Service D, which for those who aren't familiar with it, Level Service is a system we use to identify how beneficial or impactive certain improvements are. And like a school report card, A is good, F is not good. The threshold that we shoot for when we're projecting and planning for the future is Level Service D. With all these improvements implemented, we can meet Level Service D for AM, PM, and Saturday peak hours at each of these intersections, with the one exception is at the main entrance of Kings Highway and Gills Neck Road, where we're projecting a Level Service E. And that's with or the reduced land use, new volume, based on a lesser site plan, what was previously proposed. The important thing to point about that Level Service E, and what does that mean? When we do the TIS, we pick a projected build out year. In this case, we looked at the year 2014 as our build year. So what that means as a build year, that we assume our site is fully built and occupied. There's also several other projects in the area which you're familiar with that we include in that projection. I can read them off very quickly. It's Senators, Cadbury, Breakwater, Hawk's Eye, the Jones property, the Cape Henlopen High School expansion, and the Schofield project, and also Governors. In total, from the residential standpoint, there's over 1,500 units proposed in our projection, and we're expecting, from a planning standpoint, that all to happen within 5 years. So that's what that Level Service E shows. Realistically, we're probably looking at 15 to 20 year build out for that many of units. DLDOT could have asked us to mitigate that Level Service E. So why wouldn't they do that? The reason why is because they know that projection is based on a very aggressive assumption. What they have asked us to do is dedicate right away along Kings Highway, because the answer to mitigate that Level Service E and get it to a D was found to be dualization of Kings Highway, meaning two lanes each direction. They realize that that's a bigger endeavor than what they would ask any single developer to do. It's going to be a DLDOT project. They don't have the money to do that right now, and because of the time frame of the projections that we're looking at, they realize that it wasn't something that they were going to push and mandate on us. So it's a little bit of a balancing act. I mean, you can't always make Level Service D, and you have to use your judgment. In this case, the judgment was to don't move forward with the mitigation right now, but it was that Level Service E, sort of a warning to watch over the years and start planning for what may be the next step.
Whose judgment was that? Was that yours or DLDOT?
That was DLDOT's judgment.
Okay.
And the last comment I want to make before I turn it back over to Frank, there's been a lot of concerns, questions about evacuation and how is the site going to interact with a situation if ever there was an evacuation or a hurricane or any other situation. Gills Neck Road is identified as an evacuation route, but in looking at the state's plan that I have here, it's the all hazards evacuation annex, which is it's on DLDOT's website, but Savannah Road is the primary evacuation route for the city of Lewis under an event where an evacuation was ordered. If you look at this plan, you'll quickly realize that there's intersections set up, there's control points where, you know, it's set up and it's one way out. You're not going to be going about your normal business if an evacuation is ever ordered. There's going to be police and DLDOT officials out directing traffic. And so the notion of a residential or a retail establishment operating under normal conditions, under that condition, you know, you're just not going to be able to get there if that's your intent. So I did want to point that out. And with that, I can turn it back over to Mike.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Well, really in conclusion of the section of the presentation concerning conformity with the comprehensive plan, at least in our opinion, it's pretty clear that the requested zoning change from AR1 to CR1 is in direct conformity. It's for the reasons that we discussed. It's in a growth area. It's in low to medium density. CR1 is allowed. It's in the right investment levels for state spending. It's on a major arterial roadway. Sewer and water service are available. It's surrounded by development. In fact, you approach the site on roads that are already developed. It is not now, but will be an orphaned farm. There's a demand for it, and it conforms to growth and preservation goals that are in the comprehensive plan. That's pretty much it for me, so I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Schrader.
All right, sir.
Thank you, Brian. Gentlemen, the next presenter that we will have will be Mr. Willie, the engineer from George Miles and Brewing. We'll discuss with you the environmental assessment of the site and the infrastructure considerations that go into the comp plan elements and the requirements of the zoning code.
Thank you, sir. Okay. Once again, folks, if you want to get up and look around, take a look at the exhibits, feel free.
Good evening, gentlemen. For the record, James H. Willie, Jr., P.E., George Miles and Buer. Okay, hopefully by the time I'm done, my nickname can be Mr. Succinct. Try to speed this up just a little bit. Two important things with regard to the code. One is that in order to successfully make application for a rezoning project, you need to submit a preliminary site plan in accordance with Section 115-173 of the Sussex County Code. That document has been submitted and it's included in your data book under tab 1. And we would just point out that the preliminary site plan is in accordance with the county checklist. It provides for 300,000 square feet of commercial and retail area and 20,000 square feet of office space. That site plan also illustrates the required parking for the commercial and office space, the required stormwater management areas, the DLDOT recommended entrance improvements, vehicular and pedestrian connectivity to the governor's development, spaces for potential future shuttle to downtown Lewis, parking spaces for the bike path located along existing bike path along Gills Neck Road, which will connect through Senators and Hawkside to the Rails to Trails. And I believe the site plan carefully reviewed prior to submittal, and I believe it's substantially in conformance with the requirements of your code. Mr. Keyes has already spoken to the PLUS review, which normally covers some of the issues raised under Section 115-194.3 of your code, which is the environmental assessment and public facilities report required for any project in the environmentally sensitive developing area. So I'll try to briefly point out how we are in conformance with that requirement of your code. The first item in that section of code is drainage design and stormwater management. Stormwater management design will meet all current regulatory requirements. You heard Mr. Key mention repeatedly the water balance calculation, which is completed and provided under tab 5 of the data book. Basically, without going into great detail, it's a spreadsheet which takes all the existing uses, calculates the amount of water which reaches the surface water aquifer, and compares that with a detailed spreadsheet which lists all your proposed uses. And then you come up with the resulting answer of how much of the runoff needs to be captured in order to have the water infiltrating in the post-development condition equal the existing conditions. And we have found that the answer is 13.02 acres of impervious area. And we'll accomplish that through a couple different methods. The biofiltration swales, which are located around the perimeter of the site, there is actually about 6.5 acres. It's it's a scale of a 45-acre parcel. It's a little bit more than you might imagine. We anticipate that the biofiltration swales will contain mostly runoff from the roofs and other clean areas. We will also have underground infiltration to capture runoff from the parking areas. Those of you familiar with the DENREC code and know that DENREC requires any parking lot runoff to be treated prior to infiltration. We have had on-site soil investigations. Mr. Schrader mentioned that Mr. Erickson is here from Atlantic Resource Management. His preliminary report is found in tab 5 of your data book. His 17 borings indicate that all of the soils on site are suitable for infiltration. They have rapid infiltration capacity, and the groundwater table is far enough below the existing grade that there is no problem achieving the required separation between the seasonal high water table and the bottom of our infiltration practices. So the site sets up very well to utilize both biofiltration swales and under parking lot infiltration. One of the other issues that we touch on briefly, there will be no typical wet pond stormwater management on this site. We're going to handle everything using the biofiltration swales, infiltration with overflow to outfall swales, which will run down towards Pothook Creek in a southerly direction. The swales will be designed, and obviously the natural topography out there falls towards the creek. The swales will be designed such that the overflow from the underground and biofiltration swales will be spread out to a sheet flow condition prior to outfalling. So there will be no direct discharge pipes into the conservation area, no direct discharge pipes into Pothook Creek. Obviously, as you gentlemen are aware, all stormwater management and erosion sediment controls will be reviewed and approved by the Sussex Conservation District, and all of our management practices proposed will be in accordance with the current Delaware Stormwater Design Manual. We are also in the environmentally sensitive district. We will also be preparing the water quality pollution control strategy computations that are required via the DENREC watershed section assessment tool. Okay, the next item that I need to briefly address, and we've touched on, is public water supply. You've heard testimony that it will be provided by Tidewater Utilities. Further would add that the site is currently home to an existing 12-inch water line. New water lines will be extended from the existing 12-inch line to provide adequate fire protection, potable water supply. You've also heard testimony that the existing ag wells will be taken out of production. The pivot that serves the portion of the site where the village center is located is currently served by a center pivot system that's about 1,050 feet and uses between 9 and 14 million gallons per month during the period that it is operating. And we also have a report in the data book found under tab 4 prepared by Earth Data Incorporated, which specifically notes that the abandonment and reduction in use of the existing irrigation wells will greatly reduce the amount of water that's prevented from reaching the underlying aquifer as opposed to the increased impervious. So, and that assessment was made even before we did the water balance to make sure that we didn't harm the water supply and the groundwater aquifer. The Earth Data report also notes that the transferring that land use out of ag will reduce the nutrient load to the surface water aquifer. The next item in the code, item C, public wastewater collection, treatment, and disposal. The proximity map, which you can no longer see to my left, shows the location of the existing Wolf Neck Wastewater Treatment Plant. It's owned and operated by the Sussex County Engineering Department. And the applicants have already spent $2.8 million to install county-requested headwork improvements at the plant, and they've also installed existing force mains across Pothood Creek, which followed the rails to trails into the Wolf Neck. As Mr. Key mentioned, they've not only built sewer infrastructure adequate for their project, but for the surrounding projects. The next item is traffic considerations, which I believe Mr. Kennedy has covered. Item E is threatened and endangered species. As you heard from Mr. Key, the Village Center will disturb no wooded areas, no wetland areas, and all the likely habitat areas on this site have already been conserved in the conservation easement along Pothook Creek. I would point out that the width of the buffer along Pothook Creek below the TVC project ranges from approximately 200 to 300 feet in width, which is greater than the recommended minimum width of 100 feet. And in fact, the southern border of the Village Center development is an additional 500 to 1,200 feet north of the conservation easement. Item F, preservation of non-tidal wetlands. Without beating a dead horse, there are no wetlands or buffers on the TVC property subject to this rezoning application. Provisions for open space, I believe you've heard from both Mr. Key and Mr. Holland with regard to the perimeter open space, the amount of green space, the street trees, the parking islands being landscaped, the village green serving as an active open space. And just to touch base one more time, there is in fact 9.1 acres of landscaped area within the proposed rezoning. One point I would add, the approved site plan that came with the conditional use for the adjacent governors has a 50-foot building restriction along the side of the project that adjoins TVC. So we'll have our buffers on our property, the boulevard, and there will be a buffer on the adjoining development. Okay. H, provisions for public and private infrastructure. Quickly and simply, the public infrastructure will include the public water by Tidewater, public sewer by the County Engineering Department, and the public wire utilities, telephone, electric, cable, etc. Off-site improvements to Kings Highway and Gills Neck Road, which have just been delineated by Mr. Kennedy, will be operated and maintained by DLDOT, and those improvements have been agreed upon with DLDOT via the negotiated contract. Interior streets, such as they are, which are actually parking drives, they will be private, as will the streets, parking bays, curbs, sidewalks, landscaping, et cetera, within the shopping center development. Stormwater management facilities, as you know, are required to be bonded and subject to an operation and maintenance agreement between the property owner and the Sussex Conservation District, so that will be private infrastructure. And sewer and water laterals between the buildings and the publicly owned utility lines will be maintained by the owner. Item H, economic, recreational, and other benefits. You're going to hear detailed information on the economic benefits from Mr. Martins, so I won't go into that at great detail. Actually, I won't go into any detail. I will touch briefly on the additional recreational opportunities. You've heard testimony that the existing multi-use path from Gills Neck Road will run along Gills Neck Road through Governors, Senators, and tie into the existing bike path through Hawkside down the rails to trails. And then I'm sure everybody's aware that that bike path then runs south all the way to Holland Glade. Item J is historic and cultural resources, which was addressed by Mr. Key with regard to the comp plan conformity. Item K, conformity with current Sussex County Comprehensive Plan update. Assuming you don't want me to start at the introduction and work through that again, so I'll move to item L, which is mitigation of detrimental impacts. Briefly summarizing that, we've already testified that there are no wetlands on this site. There are no wooded lands. There's no critical habitats, so we won't have any detrimental impacts to those areas. Also, this area proposed for the rezoning is located in an area served by existing water and sewer utilities, So we have no additional detrimental impacts required to bring those utilities into play. I've testified regarding the best management practices and infiltration for the stormwater management, which will not only manage the stormwater and the runoff, but will provide for a water balance to protect the shallow groundwater aquifer, and that we will conform with the pollution control strategy to reduce any nutrients arising on the site. Traffic impacts and the mitigation thereof, I believe, were addressed adequately by Mr. Kennedy. And again, I would note, and I believe this has been testified to already, but out of the original tract of land, LT Associates has already placed 63.72 acres in conservation land, and 4.9 acres of that land is, in fact, directly south of our project. So we believe that by protecting the existing natural features, building within a designated growth area that contains adequate public infrastructure, by utilizing stormwater management, best management practices, including interior and perimeter greenways, by optimizing the site layout to provide the village shopping experience, that we have provided the plan and evidence that we meet the requirements specified in your environmental assessment and public facilities report. So at that point, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Schrader.